It's Thursday, December 9th, and you are listening to Against the Current, brought to you by CITR 101.9 FM's News Collective. We aim to bring you an alternative and undercover current affairs coverage from Vancouver and Lower Mainland every Thursday at 3 p.m. We're based on UBC's Vancouver campus on the ancestral, traditional, and unceded territories of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. It is important to acknowledge whose land we are on and who has been taking care of our land for centuries. I'm Trish Mahant, and today I am joined by Armand, Alex, and Rede. In today's episode, Armand and Alex speak with the president of the newly created Progress Vancouver Party, Scott DeLong Boom, and I have a little chat with Rede about how to deal with stress during this very stressful time of the year for many students in post-secondary. First, let's hear from Armand and Alex.
You're listening to CITR News, bringing you interviews with local activists, politicians, and policy experts from Vancouver and the Lower Mainland. I'm Armand Rana.
I'm Alex Trabolsi. It's Saturday, December the 4th at 4:01 p.m. We are recording this episode from our homes, but most of our homes are on the ancestral, traditional, and unceded territories of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
While elections are less than a year away, mayoral candidates are already announcing their runs, and new municipal parties are emerging. Today, we are speaking to Scott DeLong Boom.
Scott is the president of the newly created Progress Vancouver Party and host of the Politicos podcast. Scott is also a civil engineer and a former officer of the Canadian Armed Forces.
Thanks so much for taking the time out of your undoubtedly busy schedule for meeting with us today. So to start off, could you tell us a bit more about yourself, what your role is in Progress Vancouver, and why you're helping create this new party?
Certainly. Thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure to speak with you. I got involved in local politics back around the 2018 election, back when we were actually first getting going, originally as the party Yes Vancouver. Got fairly involved in that. And after the election in 2018, we continued to do the work of keeping the party going, building engagement with the community. And one of the things that came out of that was that we felt and received feedback that the Yes Vancouver name was not really properly conveying what both the party was about and what we wanted to see happen in Vancouver. So as part of our preparations for the upcoming election, we've undergone a rebranding to Progress Vancouver.
Right. So as you've mentioned, it was sort of this transition from calling it Yes Vancouver to Progress Vancouver. Could you just go a little bit more into how it's connected to and different from its predecessor?
Right, certainly. So in the 2018 election, we were really focused on the housing issue, and our name kind of reflected our philosophy around that and the issues there. But we felt that that wasn't really fully connecting with both where the members wanted to go with the party, as well as kind of the broader range of issues that reflect the concerns of Vancouverites and the continuing challenges the city faced. So as part of that, we looked at a variety of options and settled on Progress Vancouver to better convey that wider spectrum of issues that we want to see progress being made on, that we feel there's been nothing having been done on that over the last 3 years under the current government.
So in terms of the composition of your party, you yourself attempt to get the nomination for city council under the MPA. Mark Marison, who I believe is seeking the mayoral nomination from Progress Vancouver, has long worked as an advisor to BC Liberal candidates. One of the 2018 Yes Vancouver candidates is now treasurer for the MPA. Hector Bremner, who was the mayoral candidate in 2018 for Yes Vancouver, he was also city councillor for the MPA previously. And so both, you have a lot of ties to both the MPA and the BC Liberals, and they are viewed as kind of center-right parties. Don't you think the name Progress would confuse some voters and see you as a left-wing party? Or what are your thoughts on that?
Well, thank you for the question. Municipal politics is somewhat interesting, the fact that it doesn't always align on left-right issues. One of the biggest issues facing the city right now is related to the housing affordability, and how the city physically changes in response to that. And if you look at the divides on the current council, you can't really track that along the left-right axis. Councillors from both the MPA and One City are in favor of pretty significant changes to the built environment of the city, where councillors from COPE and the MPA are also deeply opposed to that. So this is an example of how left-right doesn't really capture the issues that are affecting Vancouver. And as a result, I don't think it's really the right way to see this, because really there are ideas that come from people on the left, come from people on the right, that we can both kind of agree on as common sense reforms that need to go forward on this. And it's that forward motion, the progress that results from that, that our name invokes.
All right.
And I'll also add that, a couple of the more prominent members at the moment have come from past connections with the MPA. We have a diverse team. We have board members and people seeking nominations who have had previous experience with Vision Vancouver or the provincial NDP. So it is a big tent party in that respect. And we are actively speaking with people from across the political spectrum, because we think that's actually what's needed to bring everyone together so we can move forward and achieve real change in the city.
All right. So speaking of change in the city in a very loosely connected way, so as you're, I have no doubt, well aware, Vancouver's voting system is the at-large voting system. 10 councillors represent the whole of Vancouver, excluding the election for the mayor. Charlie Smith, the editor of the Georgia Strait, has often argued that this system discriminates against minorities and those with non-European surnames. I'm just curious what your thoughts are on this system and how you're going about navigating it.
I have a range of views on the current system. I think there are definitely some issues with it. But in terms of making substantive changes, I think it's important to kind of engage with Vancouver. Right? And we don't have a specific direction on where we want to see the changes or if there should be changes to the at-large system. The concerns around it not properly representing the diversity of Vancouver is a very fair criticism of it, and one we'd be looking to address, certainly, but we've not settled on a direction on what's the most effective way to do that. And we're interested in hearing from both Vancouverites and experts in the field of political science on how best to address those concerns.
All right. So let's say it's 16th of October, 2022. What would Progress Vancouver realistically see as electoral success?
Electing a mayor and a majority on council.
All right. And if you were to achieve that, what would change for Vancouverites?
Well, one of our top priorities is dealing with the housing affordability crisis. And part of that is addressing the acute shortage of housing in the city of Vancouver and, well, across the region, but we're focused directly on the city of Vancouver, and taking concrete steps to lift the bans that prevent affordable social housing and rental housing from being built across the city. Right now, about 75% of the city under the current zoning laws just bans that entirely, and we would be looking to lift those restrictions and get production moving on housing to serve the entire income spectrum of Vancouver and remove the housing shortage and improve the housing affordability in that way, as well as working with our partners at the federal and provincial level to secure additional funding for SkyTrain to UBC. We want to have that going with shovels in the ground by the start of, or sorry, by the end of the next term, as well as we would be looking to work with those partners to deliver increased resources to deal with the mental health and addictions challenges that many members of the community are experiencing.
All right.
So one other issue is climate. So there's a $200 million poll, I believe, in the climate emergency plan put forward by city council, or actually put forward by city staff to city council. Kennedy Stewart has proposed recently an additional 1% climate levy on homes. Prior to this, council fell short of approving a parking fee for overnight parking, which was the recommendation by city staff. What funding options would Progress Vancouver pursue for this climate emergency, if at all?
Thanks for the question. We are very concerned about the climate emergency, and we support the city taking further steps towards addressing it. And myself and I think the rest of the party was quite disappointed to see Kennedy Stewart vote against the funding proposal that staff brought forward and effectively delay in the climate action as a result of that. We're looking at a wide range of options. There's a $230 million hole over the next 5 years in the climate budget, and the $100 million that the mayor is proposing doesn't really cover the full hole. We're looking at a range of options. I think it's a little early to make any specific announcements or directions on that, but our policy team is looking at a couple different revenue models that will not just raise the $100 million, but will raise the full amount to cover the climate adaptation, as well as it's worth looking at how we can do more to build the communities that are able to be both resilient to climate disruptions that we've unfortunately all experienced here in the province recently, as well as reduce the carbon impacts of the lifestyles associated with that. And a huge part of that is building the compact and walkable communities that Vancouver has started with in some areas, but the same ban that prevents affordable housing from being built in a huge swath of the city also effectively makes it very hard to build those communities. So changing the land use policies to actually build the compact, walkable neighborhoods where people have access to what they need with a short walk or bicycle ride rather than needing to get in the car to access those services and amenities is going to be a huge part of our climate plan.
Yeah, thanks. So, and specifically, you know, with regards to these funding options, so you mentioned like you were disappointed Kennedy voted against it. So you're in favor of the increased parking fees. So what are your thoughts on increased property taxes? Like, I'm just trying to understand what kind of funding mix are you coming from? Like, what's your approach to developing a funding mix?
Certainly. We're looking at a bunch of different options here. We're not necessarily ruling out anything on the various revenue models at this point. We do want to be cognizant of the fact that this is a city that has significant affordability challenges, and costs levied by the government definitely contribute to that. So we're looking at ways to generate those revenues that don't fall on the people who can least afford it. So we're going to be working along those lines. Nothing is necessarily out of the question at this point on that, but I can't really speak to the final model we're going to settle on because that is still an ongoing process.
All right. I had another question with regards to, you know, the left-right spectrum. You said an interesting thing, you know, which is, I think, observably true that, you know, there are COPE members who are joining hands with MPA members to oppose zoning changes and One City members joining hands with other MPA members to approve zoning measures. And kind of that was the genesis of Yes Vancouver on the issue of, you know, zoning. There isn't that clear left-right divide. But in other issues, for example, on the issue of, you know, property tax and stuff like that, I do think we can still see a clear left-right divide. And so where would you situate Progress Vancouver? You're saying it's a big tent sort of party. Does that mean that you'd like be open to having socialists and capitalists in the same party, or is it more that it's a centrist party and everybody's kind of trying to gravitate towards the center?
We're open to anyone who's interested in engaging with the party and becoming a member. I can tell you that we, in some of our discussions, we have quite a range of views that are expressed. And we're doing the important work of hearing all those views and coming to consensus within the party on how best to proceed on that. And that includes looking beyond what has kind of traditionally fallen in the narrow spectrum of left-right or right around the center of the party. We think some fairly bold changes are needed within Vancouver, and that does mean finding good ideas wherever they come from on the spectrum. So we're not opposed to listening to people with fairly free market ideas or fairly socialist ideas if we think that's actually going to be something that can deliver real results without causing any challenges. And it's an ongoing process, but we think that the ideas that are going to come out of this process are not necessarily going to be the same sort of fairly narrow stuff that the socialists will yell at the conservatives about and vice versa. We think we can find a path that will maybe not satisfy everyone, but will generate a broad coalition that most Vancouverites will find themselves reflected in.
All right. Well, thanks so much for taking the time out of your day, your weekend of all days, to talk to us, Scott. Is there anything else about Progress Vancouver you'd like to highlight before we go our ways?
Certainly. So we're engaging with the community on this. We have our website, Progress Vancouver, where you can go to both get a membership if you want to be part of the movement that we're building, as well as to we want to hear from you regarding policy ideas, concerns, and any of that. And you can go to our page at progressvancouver.ca to find out that information and express your concerns to us on what you see as the big issues in the city and how you'd like to see them addressed.
All right. Thank you very much. And that brings us to the end of our segment.
Thanks, Armand and Alex, for sitting down with Scott. And thanks to Scott for taking the time and coming onto the show this week.
The haunting debut album Black Moon by Civic TV provides a cinematic backdrop, a modern-day symphony of the dark and light that is our collective reality. Take a listen to Black Moon, now available via Flemish Eye Records and on all streaming platforms.
Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop is Vancouver's choicest destination for one-of-a-kind artist-made prints, posters, screen prints, riso prints, paintings, acrylic paintings, watercolor paintings, ceramic mugs, ceramic plates, ceramic bowls, ceramic pots, lapel pins, hats, toques, crochet bathing suits, jewelry, trinkets, knickknacks, hand-painted signs, curated thrift, and a bunch more stuff that won't fit in this designated block of airtime. Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop, located at 1636 Venables, just off Commercial. Open 11 to 6, 6 days a week.
Do you like to stare out of the window on long car rides thinking about your feelings? Do you like to watch the trees sway with the wind to the gentle sounds of an acoustic guitar? Then Feeling Sounds is the radio show for you. Tune in to CITR 101.9 FM on Thursdays at 4 p.m. for some soft indie music.
Sit on the carpet, sipping on chamomile, tell me a day.
Interested in making radio? How about hosting your own show? At CITR, you can make your radio dreams come true by joining a collective. From news, art, sports, to gender empowerment, accessibility, music, and the BIPOC collective, there's definitely something for everyone. Explore new worlds both virtually and at our station, and be prepared to have a blast with some new pals. For more information or to join, please visit citr.ca/get involved.
Welcome back to Against the Current. Now, let's talk about the final season and all the stress that comes with it. This week, I sat down with Fride for a chat about what causes stress and what strategies can students use to deal with the stressful time.
Hi, everybody. So today I have Fride with me here, and we will have a conversation about how to manage stress and cope with finals, since everybody here at UBC is dealing with finals and probably every university in Vancouver and Lower Mainland is probably dealing with finals these days. And it would be very beneficial to talk about stress and how to cope with it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, Trish. To the listeners, welcome back to CITR 101.9. What I'm talking about today is basically just going to be stuff from my Psych 102 class with Dr. Simon Lelio. And all of the stuff we're talking about here actually came directly from him when I asked him about how I could better deal with my exam anxiety, because that's something that I suffer from as well. So, yeah. You want to get started?
That's amazing. Yeah. So, would you like to share some of the things you've been learning lately in class?
Definitely. So before we talk about how to reduce exam stress, I think we need to talk about what stress is itself. It's a response when we feel threatened in some manner. But in a short term, stress is actually a great thing. It helps us focus. It helps us, survive. But in the long term, chronic stress can actually have a lot of terrible consequences for us. Individuals who have stress are more susceptible to colds, which if you know what's going on around campus these days, you know that everyone's falling sick. And luckily, it's not COVID. From every single person that I've heard, they've tested negative, so that's good. But besides that, people heal more slowly when stressed versus non-stressed. There's actually a study done by Maruka and colleagues in 1998 that looked at a bunch of dental students. And they basically gave them all little puncture holes, wounds in their body. And they did the same. They repeated that study over summer break, and then they repeated it just before final exam season, sort of where we are right now. And what they found is that those wounds themselves healed much slower when those students were stressed. So just the fact that they were closer to the exam period meant that they weren't healing as fast. That just blows my mind.
Yeah.
Besides that, people with chronic stress are more susceptible to higher blood pressure, more susceptible to cardiac disease. These are all things that we're trying to avoid. But we do actually want to, I really want to talk about the physiology behind why more stress leads to all of these terrible things. And that's because the body manifests stress as this hormone called cortisol. Now, the more cortisol you have in your system, that means that blood and other resources are directed more towards stuff that's absolutely essential for survival. More blood to things like muscles and bones and your brain so you can think properly. But this means that a lot of other really important bodily functions are sort of put on the back burner. And one of the most important ones is that when your body experiences increased cortisol, it inhibits the telomerase enzyme. Now, for those of you who know biology, know that the telomerase enzyme works by remaking the telomeres on our DNA, which basically means that every time a cell divides, the telomeres get shortened and shortened. Now, the telomerase enzyme's job is to remake those telomeres so that the cells doesn't degrade or age as rapidly. This is why we see sort of across the board with world leaders and, whenever people take an office that's quite stressful, we see that saw this with Barack Obama most recently. With as soon as he entered office, he looked like a young 30-year-old young man, and coming out of the presidency, just 8 years, how he aged rapidly. That I think, and it's the amount of stress that comes with the job, and not just Obama. I mean, even we're seeing that with Trudeau, even though he's only been in office for a few years, with Bush, Clinton, basically every recent president. And that is what we're trying to avoid here.
Wow, thanks for all that information today. That was a lot of academic jargon, but would you like to tell us what are some practical ways of coping with stress?
Absolutely. And sorry about the academic jargon, but I'm basically regurgitating everything I learned in psych class.
That's interesting.
Now, I do have last little bit of technical jargon here left, but after this, I'm going to move into talking about the strategies themselves. Now, there's this thing called Lazarus appraisal model of stress, where when we come across a stressful stimulus, we go through two stages of appraisal. The first, the primary appraisal being, we basically ask ourselves, does it matter to me? And as university students heading into final season, I hope it matters to us. It should matter to us. And so clearly, finals are no joke. It matters to us. Then we move on to the secondary appraisal, which basically asks, can I cope with this? And if the answer to that is no, that's when we have a stressful response. When we believe that this is a stressful situation, it's a stressful stimulus, and we don't think we can handle it. But on the other hand, when we do think we can handle it, we actually take on the challenge, which then turns into excitement, which uses that stress as a eustress, a positive stress response that allows us to be better focused and you know, more productive, more motivated when it comes to our work. Now, what can we do? You asked about what can we do to reduce exam stress, and clearly that's something that's on everyone's mind. Mm-hmm. Now, a number of studies boil down basically to four major categories. The first is a little, it's hard to understand, but perceived control. How much control you have over a situation directly correlates with how much stress you feel when it comes to it. Mm. Your perceived control of a situation basically means, do I have control over my own actions? And this has been replicated across different professions from, you know, healthcare to engineering. If you think that you can control what it is that you do on any given day, the amount of stress you feel goes way down. Which right now, with the last day of class going by, we have more control over our time now, which means that if we can understand that we have complete control over our time. I read an amazing quote the other day, which basically said, at any given moment, you're doing what you most want to be doing.
Right.
And that was just like a completely, completely changed my perspective. Like, oh, I want to be scrolling through TikTok right now. I guess I do. Yeah. And that basically boils down to it. The perceived control of your time, if you take control of the situation, you won't feel as stressed because you're clearly doing something. Because stress doesn't come from hard work itself. You know, you could be working really hard and not be as stressed. But at the same time, you could be out of work and be incredibly stressed about that. The second thing that's a really important factor when it comes to stress is social support. If you have the kind of social group where you can talk to other people, relax at the end of the day, you know, if you've been grinding for a few hours and hold up an IKB or coroner, if you can find yourself a group of friends or even study with friends. I usually don't study with my friends because we just get distracted all the time
and
the conversation goes off on a tangent. But today, like one of the things we did was we all had our headphones on and we were just working side by side, but on individual things. So, and if for the first time I felt like, you know what, maybe working with other people is kind of fun. We didn't really get to talk, though, so that was something. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, if you can find yourself a group, if you can maybe grab a coffee here and there, or just, you know, have some fun with people that you identify with, that's just amazing for what it can do for your stress levels. Now, the next 2 points are going to be one of those things, it's going to be two of those things that everyone knows we should be doing, but we don't really get the chance to do it, and that's exercise and meditation. But I guess what I can do is I can talk about why it's so important. Exercise, clearly, everyone knows we should be doing working out more. Myself included, I know how important it is for me. I don't do it enough. And finally, meditation. Mindfulness has just been incredible. Whatever kind of meditation you practice, whether that's you know, mindfulness, Zen, or whatever you like, I use this little app on my phone called Insight Timer. They're not sponsoring us, so I think I can talk about it. But Insight Timer has just some great guided meditations and some great meditation timers that can help you sort of take a moment, take a breath, and just relax. Yeah. Now, finally, I want to move into this little segment where the other day I went to my psych prof's office hours for the first time in the term. I really wish I had spent more time because I strongly recommend a class with Dr. Lalayo if you get a chance.
Right.
But I was like, hey, heading into final season, I'm not as concerned about the finals, but I still feel stressed. What can I do to reduce that? He gave me just 3 amazing tips, and I want to share that with all of you. The first one seems rather rudimentary, but it really helped me, which is basically just thinking about your happy place. Now, Dr. Lalayo described his happy place as his place on the beach, where he would often play instruments with his friends and just be completely carefree. I think he's talking about how he would spend evenings there, and it would be just the most peaceful experience for him. So maybe you've got a happy place, too. I'm still finding mine. So, you know, maybe it's the IHOP down the road from where you grew up.
Right.
Or a McDonald's or something. But or a Starbucks, perhaps, if where you meet with friends.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're like me, it's the CATR studio. The second strategy that he gave me was to reframe anxiety as excitement. The physiological response with anxiety and excitement tends to be very, very similar. So if you do feel stressed about an exam, but like I do, you know, in those moments sort of leading up to when you're about to walk into a place and write an exam that you've been preparing for weeks for at this point, you get butterflies. But the thing is, that's not that different from when you're super excited about a situation. Mm-hmm. So that simple act of reframing that cognitive, or putting a different cognitive label on this thing, mm-hmm. that what you're feeling is not anxiety, but it's excitement. Yeah. That really helps things. And I've used this before subconsciously, or rather unconsciously, when I'm super stressed about a speech or a debate or something like that. Mm-hmm. And that's been just immensely helpful. And finally, this last point's my favorite. And it's something that was completely new to me, but it's been super helpful, which is to write down three things that matter to you outside of school. You know, we often, as students, we lose sight of the fact that we're more than just students. We're more than just people, you know, enrolled in five courses, writing midterms and finals and doing research papers and essays and group projects that don't work out well.
Yeah.
So just recognizing that you do have a life outside of academia and recognizing that, you know, perhaps your family, that's something that matters far more than academics ever could, or your friends. Just jotting down a few things, perhaps your passion for playing the violin.
Yeah.
Simple things like that, writing them down, give context to a situation, and perhaps make the immediate situation not feel as desolate or as impactful as you might be making it out to be. And that's basically all that I have to share. And if you get a chance to take Psych 102 with Dr. Loyo, strongly recommend it. It's my favorite course at the moment.
Yeah.
No offense to any of my other professors.
Yeah, they're going to hear this.
They're absolutely going to hear it.
But yeah, thank you so much, Rene, for sharing all
this
information.
My pleasure,
If you don't get 100 in this class now, I will be very disappointed.
But, honestly, so will I.
But that was really great, and that helped me a lot too. Now I'm gonna be thinking about my happy place.
Oh, that's awesome.
But yeah, thank you so much for coming on.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much.
And that's our show today.